Hey, everybody. Welcome to a BTD interview with Billy Sparrow. Yeah, I have Billy Sparrow in the house with me right now. Welcome. Nice to meet you.
No, well, thank you. Nice to meet you, too. Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Oh, sure thing. I just got to talk to you about your name, first of all. Billy. B-L-I. I love that. I don't think I've ever seen that before. And so I want to know, is this like the original spelling? What's behind all of this? Did you change it?
Well, my name is Billy. And when I was little, they used to call me Little Billy and Billy and all that. And it sounded like a cowboy. So I didn't really want to keep that as I was growing up because of what was going on during it. But when Jimi Hendrix and I got into him as a teenager, when he started his music and everything, I was into him. So I thought it was like kind of cool that if I just spelled it B-I-L-I, I would have the same number of letters in my first and last name. So that's why it's B-I-L-I, Sparrow.
See, I knew it was unique. There was a reason for that. I love it. It sounds like you've had such a very interesting journey, and I just can't wait to dig into finding out all about it. But first question I got to ask you that I always ask for the BTD listeners out there is, where are you from?
Well, I'm born and raised in a town that's like 8 miles out of Boston, and it's called West Medford. It's in between Arlington, Malden, Stoneham, and Winchester.
Okay.
So it's like not too far from there, but our town, West Medford, is, you know, was known for a predominantly black neighborhood. 4 or 5 streets, and there was a lot of musicians and things. That's how I got started in the music. You know, people singing on the corners and
very cool
the doo-wop era, and a lot of musicians from there, jazz musicians and R&B guys came from that town. So we call it the Ville, and that's where I was born and raised, West Medford, Massachusetts. Shout out to that.
Yeah, huge shout out. How awesome is that? Oh my gosh, I just have so many questions for you. But so just ask you probably the easiest one, I think. But I was reading that you packed your bags as a very young age at 17 and headed out to San Francisco. Wow. I mean, what did your parents think about that? And were you scared? I mean, I know I would be at that young age. That's a huge city. You know, it is. It's a huge city today. You can imagine a huge city at such a young age as 17. Do you have any regrets of that move? Or can you name some fun adventures that you had while you were embarking on that move?
Well, what happened was I graduated high school, you know, when I was like 17 or so. And, you know, I was already into music. I had been playing in different bands and doing different things. And I had like a debut show, a show that my very first show I came out and did with all the major artists and everything from our town in a big festival they had down the park.
Sweet.
So I did that, you know, sang The Letter by Joe Cocker and Spill the Wine by Eric Burden and War, and it went over pretty good. So this is even before I started playing guitar. So from there, I got, you know, into other bands, doing other things, playing the congas or something like that. And, you know, that's how I got started. So when I left West Medford to go to San Francisco, I had some people that I knew that lived there. So it was kind of cool. I could go and find someone that I knew. And my parents at that point, I was like out of the house at 14 anyways, like I said, doing shows and stuff. So there was no big thing. I graduated from high school, so no big deal. I just took off and went there. And it wasn't scary at all. I mean, like, it was like me, I like doing adventures anyway. So like, to me, it was like just an adventure, but it was like a music, I was going because of my music aspirations. And I figured I'd like the San Francisco sound, you know, the flower people and all that. And it was like kind of the hit thing, like my 15, 16 year age. So at that time I was ready to go. So I just went and said, San Francisco, here I come.
So any regrets?
No, I didn't really have any regrets. I mean, like, everything worked out fine. I stayed there for a while. I got into the music scene. I got my way around. It's actually funny. It's kind of like the first couple of days I got there, I went to an audition. And I went to an audition, you know, to play guitar for an R&B group. And, you know, I got the job, but I didn't end up taking it because it was too much like what I was doing back home. And at that point, that's when I really started trying to stretch out and find my own avenue for a sound to try and put music out and represent. At that point, I got tired of doing, you know, the covers and everything. Everything sounded the same. Actually, every band that you ever played with did the same song list. I'm a little bit more adventurous with my music than that, so that didn't appeal to me, and I had to, you know, just back out of that one. And, you know, fun stuff about it is I got to do a lot of things that I would have never had been able to do at that time period, or what I did if I wasn't there. Like, I happened to go to a New Year's Eve concert at Winterland, and going to Winterland is like the greatest thing in the world you could ever do if you know what Winterland's about for bands and stuff. And at that show was Herbie Hancock was the headliner, and Santana.
Nice.
And it was Journey's very first concert. Their very
really?
First concert that they have ever done.
Wow.
Since they started was at that show on New Year's Eve. And Marlo, Santana's brother. So I got backstage, you know, eventually I always ended up getting backstage when I was younger. I got backstage and I seen Santana and I went up to him, you know, introduced myself. He gave me a couple of minutes to talk to me, which was kind of cool. I said, yeah, man, it's one of my dreams to one day, you know, jam with you and stuff. And he said, if it's in the stars, my brother, it'll happen. So that ain't happened yet. But in any event, I remember him telling me that. And that was kind of an adventure that I had.
Oh, gosh,
that
yeah.
I'll always remember.
Yeah, that is definitely one that you will always remember. That is a story that you can tell other people. And other people are like, ooh, how cool is that? And you were there at that moment. That is awesome. So you were actually seeking to make some musical adventures as you're doing all of this. Can you explain, can you tell us some details of how all that turned out?
Well, you know, I started this thing when I was younger, and then I started doing the music thing because I was kind of intrigued by some artists that I thought were very cool, and in my idea I really liked them. But I've been listening to music since I was a kid because of my parents and the jazz and stuff like that. So I was like really into Charlie Parker. I liked how he had the sounds and how it went along with it. So knowing that kind of stuff and listening to that, Dizzy Gillespie and that kind of stuff, I kind of liked what they were doing. So I kind of figured that I would try to make a kind of music that I could express sort of those ideas in that way. But of course, you know, doing straight R&B and stuff like that, which I could still do, but I wanted to find some other way to express that phrasing and stuff in the music. But of course, instead of using saxophone and stuff, I was playing guitar, playing it on the guitar. So as far as, you know, me trying to further that, I was making songs sort of like in that way. Like if I did a funk song, I'd do a funk song and I'd put some stuff in it. But later on, when the rap music came out and stuff, that even seemed more appealing because you could, with the beats they were using and the things that they were doing at that point, it made sense. So I kept on trying to do that, and that's what I'm keeping on trying to do. This new album is probably the latest version of something, but there's other things that I'm working on that. So I figured I'd put this one out because this one is the closest to what's going on and what's happening with me at the moment.
Very cool. I see you're molding with the moments, which is the times, I would say, which is absolutely awesomeness. You know what? I understand that later on you headed back to Boston. So you had enough of the San Francisco stuff and you headed back to Boston. So what age was that? And how was that actual transition heading back to Boston? Did you feel like you were at home or what?
Well, I kind of left San Francisco after about a year and a half. And before, it wasn't like I was discouraged or anything. I just knew that I could do a lot more things. You know what I mean? As far as get someone in a band and do things like that to get a little bit further. But before I did that, I ended up going to Los Angeles. I figured, oh, we're in San Francisco now, so let's head out to Los Angeles and see what's bumping out there. Well, when we got out there, there was a lot going on, but Los Angeles is very, like, you know, closed in, and you don't really know what's going on. You're not going to find out too fast. So we went through a couple of things and, you know, experienced some of the atmosphere and things. I figured, no, we're not going to do any better here right now, so let's head on back to Boston. And that's what we did. We packed our bags, came on back to Boston, and that was like about a year and a half after. It wasn't too much, you know what I mean? It's just that I knew how I could get people to play with and do different things if I came back home instead of trying to meet people and things like that. That was kind of hard back in them days.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. I've been back and forth all over the place too, so I get it. So now that we've uncovered some of your background, let's move to your music. How did you actually come up with the name The Black Sheep? And then we've got it in parentheses, of the family. How'd that come about?
Well, The Black Sheep of the family was a name that was chosen because we kind of wanted to have something that sounded different, but not too different to be whack or anything like that back in them days. Bring too much attention to it. And I remember that my aunt, she used to call me the black sheep of the family as a joke. You know, well, you hear black sheep of the family, that's supposed to be like a negative thing, like the worst person in the family or something like that. But it wasn't how she was putting it. She was just, because, you know, when I was a kid, I was wild. You know, funny and all kinds of stupid crap. Plus, I tried to sing and emulate singers and things. So sometimes when the parents were around, they'd have me do a little entertaining or whatever, and I'd do that. So she called me the black sheep of the family. So I brought it up to the band, and we all, like, dug it. We're like, yeah, that sounds good. That's what we'll be, the black sheep of the family. And it's been that since.
Oh, that's good. That is a good story. You really do have some good stories, that's for sure. So very interesting story, as we talk about stories, about the In the Forest. So instead of me actually sharing that information to our BTED listeners, I'm going to hand this over to you. I'm going to hand that mic. Yeah. Hand that mic on over to you and let you tell us your own story to our listeners.
Yeah, we did In the Forest. That was like, we were in the band doing R&B stuff before we went to San Francisco. What we were doing was we were doing the R&B songs and everything, and what made it work with us is when it changed to them having like the crazy guitar sounds in the song, because every other song is really straight guitar. But when they had the fuzz and the wah-wah sound and all that, that's what made it like a little bit more of a, you know, ambitious quest for me and the keyboard player. So he was like Sly playing his keyboards with the wah-wah, and I was like using the effects and things on the guitar. So when they had like songs like Who's That Lady and different songs where the guitar was prominent in the song, we fit good with that. We were good doing that. So we started doing that kind of stuff, and it led on to us doing our own things. And when In the Forest came up, it was like during practice, because we'd practice like 3 or 4 nights a week. We were on it. And we would, you know, mess around, tuning up or whatever. And Forrest Terry, the bass player at the time, who was the original bass player in our band, he would play this riff and just keep on playing this song. It was like emulating, you know, Graham Central Station or something, I believe. Larry Graham was one of his better bass players in Bootsy. Me too. I love them guys. He was messing around, and we kept on listening to it. We were like kind of laughing at him and saying, man, you're not playing it. What is that? But after a while, it started sticking. So we kind of said, okay, let's put a beat to that. What are we going to do? What make it sound like? So, of course, once we made it sound like a song, I said, okay, everybody, you know, write down some lyrics to this, and we'll all put it together. And no one wrote lyrics, so I ended up coming up with this, like, nursery rhyme type. I don't know if you would say it was a rap or whatever, but it was like a nursery rhyme type thing. And if you notice, when I'm singing it in the song, I'm also doing like the stuff that Michael Jackson does at the end of his phrases. For some odd way, I was just doing, saying words or whatever, making sounds at the ends of the phrases. So we just ended up doing it. Went to the recording studio. The guy said, yeah, come on in. He was great, engineer, and everything we had, everything was fine. I made a suggestion. I said, hey, look, well, I'm producing, you know, this record, and I'm getting everybody together. I wrote the music and all this. I said, why don't we do it like I'll be the producer and you be the executive producer? And he was all like, yeah, that sounds fine. It sounds great. So the next session we had, I go there was no one there.
Oh, no.
He made me a producer that day, because that's how we eventually finished In the Forest and put it out. And I'm surprised that it took off so well, but it was always great when we did it live in our shows. So people probably no one heard us doing our shows when the record came out. They kind of figured it out, but it took a long time for people to discover that song.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, that must have been pretty weird, nobody being there. So, you know, as you're talking about your music and how you're, you know, putting it all together and the sounds and the sound effects, I do notice that your music sounds different, which is great, you know, because we need to basically just be ourselves on who we are, identifying who we are as a musician, a singer, etc. So I find that your music is different and interesting. I had a chance to actually listen to several of your songs, and I have to say, I like that multi-genre thing. You know, I like how that's going on. How would you best describe your music?
And like I said, you know, we were trying to develop some kind of sound or whatever, and when we started out, I called it flock rock. Label on the 45, it says Flock Rock Records. That means, you know, everyone flock and everyone's into it, whatever. It's flock rock.
I love it.
And that was cool for that. But when I came out with the punk rock record, that's on Ransom Records, we did a punk rock 45. And that was just when it was kicking over to rap, because actually we had did a rap song on another label of ours and put that out. But the punk rock record, when we put that out, it was close to like rap taking off and things. So later on, when I started dealing with a lot more rappers and things in our shows and writing for them and producing music for them, I said, well, I'm gonna just make the label Ransom Records, and that'll be for that, for everything. So that's how that ended up being where it is today.
Nice. So out of all of this, who would you say are your influences? I'm sure you've had some, because we just talked about like Jimi Hendrix at the very beginning, how it was an influence for your name and how you got the name just right and all that. So who are your influences, both musical and non-musical?
Like I said, you know, I was into Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie. I actually met him once, and I had breakfast with him, talking about the music and stuff. And I was telling him how, you know, my approach was to it and everything. And he heard some of the things I was doing. He said, yeah, well, you just got to keep it going. You just got to keep on doing it. So, I mean, a little bit of advice went a long way. But I never was going to stop anyways. I'm always, that's all I do, is just do music. Try and paint a picture of what's going on around us and try to put it in words and notes.
That is so true. I mean, that's what artists do, right? We write our songs, we paint the picture of what we have in our minds, and we deliver it. So you are definitely delivering it in so many different ways. So I really want to talk about your new song, Beantown. Oh, what a great track, I gotta say. So I want to know, what is the song all about? And how long did it take to complete? What made your decision to bring it out now? And who all was involved? And did you write it? I hope that all made sense, because I'm just so excited to hear all about this. So I'm going to throw it back over to you.
Yeah, Beantown is the song that they put out first to get let everyone hear it, because when I release the album, of course, it'll be on there, but there's like 9 other songs that go along with the theme. But it's about Boston, but instead of making anything specific or anything, I just tell you that, you know, we're an hour from the Mayflower. We came from the sea, we tossed the tea. And I mentioned different neighborhoods or things that you would encounter in Boston. Nothing bad or anything, just people in Boston and from the area, they'll know what I'm talking about. And anybody else, they'll be like trying to, you know, get an idea of what I'm saying. I mean, but instead of just coming out and saying this, this, and that. Good, how are you?
Okay, you feeling good?
Yes, fine. Okay. Thank you, Mom. And, you know, I'm just trying to just keep it on a level. And just tell you it's 1 hour from the Mayflower. It's where they toss the tea into the sea. And tell you what different areas that you might encounter when you're out there.
I love it. Oh, and tell your mom I said hi. Hey, yeah, so let's do this before we get into the rest of the questions that I have you. Give you some time to think about what I just said, all those questions. Let's go ahead and play Beantown by Billy Sparrow.
Came from the sea, they dropped the tree. Yeah. 1 hour from the Mayflower.
They came from the sea, and they dropped the tree.
Yeah. 1 hour from the Mayflower.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
You need
Beantown,
try to
avoid
the Beantown.
1 hour from the Mayflower.
Living amongst kings, living without castles. The Spanish magic, Italian, ice Italian flow. So diverse, you go from 0 to 60 in a second before you try to hit it in reverse. Cause you never know when you're in Beantown.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea. Try to avoid the beat down.
Yeah. I ain't got no other way, but you know that I'm gonna see the dead. I don't know. I'm up in the strain. Hey. Stack the money up every time. the time. We got the time. We gon' grind. We gon' grind.
When we came to the sea, we got the team. When we came to the sea, we got the team.
Everybody got me in my vibe, but I know I gotta get it this time. I gotta go grind. Yeah, I gotta go grind.
Came from the sea and then we tossed that tape.
Wait a minute. That vibe.
Came from the sea and that tea got tossed. Yeah, that's where we're from, doggone it. Shout out to West Memphis.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
East Dorchester, the Berry. Roll through them hoods and do it in a hurry. Just now, North End, JP and Man of Pan. That's where we play. Catch us if you can. Come on.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
Yeah.
One time, one time, one time, one time.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
Yeah.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
Club.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
I swear to God.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
Drop the tea. Tea, drop the tea.
When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
You ain't heard us. So we might hurt us. If we get ready to
drop.
Boss is what you gonna do.
The sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea. When we came to the sea, we got the tea.
And the Berry. Yeah, roll through the hood and do it in a hurry. Charlestown, North End, JP and Mattapan. That's where we play catch us if you can. Come on.
Oh yeah, just love those subliminal messages going on there. Oh, so we're back here with Billy Sparrow, and I had a lot of questions that I had for you. So the next question that I had on my list, so why did you decide to, you know, release this song now?
It's like the most recent stuff that I did to put this album right now together, so... It was like I did the music and everything first, and it took me like another year or so to get together with the people who sing and perform on the album and the record. And I went back home to Boston and recorded that. So that's ready, and some other things that we'll be releasing on the album. I hope you enjoy.
And who all was involved?
It was my niece, no, my nephews, and my daughter are singing. And when I went back there, I had an engineer that I worked with on my punk rock record. This is back in the 80s, for crying out loud. And luckily, I got in touch with him, and he had time. So the whole time I was there, I think I spent the whole time in the studio trying to get this done so I could put this album out. And basically, I want to put it out so people can hear it. If they can get it on certain platforms and like it, I'd appreciate that. I mean, I wrote it for the people, so let's see what the people respond and how they deal with that.
Yeah, let's see.
And that's all I could say about that.
Well, what other songs do you have coming out?
Yeah, some other songs we have on the album coming out, you know, like House on Fire, Never Go Home a Hero, Why Do You Leave, Hang and Bang Love, you know, there's some things out there hopefully you like, and, you know, See how it goes.
Those are some great titles. So you're probably very used to titles, right? Because you used to be a DJ. Yeah, we're letting the cat out of the bag, letting everybody know that you used to be a DJ in the 80s. Oh my gosh, the 80s. So in the 80s, did you actually play all 80s music or rock music? Tell us all about it.
Well, when I was in college, I went to college for sports, fitness, and leisure. You know, I was into, like, wanted to be a coach and stuff like that. But I got involved in the activities, and they had a radio station there. So at the radio station at my college, Salem State University now, I had a radio show, and it was like from 9 to 12 on Saturdays. And like, you could only hear it in the immediate area. I mean, like, you couldn't hear it where I live in West Medford or anywhere else, but you could hear it up on the North Shore and stuff like that. So it was kind of successful. I was there every Saturday, and I would play live stuff. I would, you know, mix songs, and I'd play everything. David Bowie, punk rock, everything. But it flowed, and that's what I was doing. They called me Spizboy with Magic, WMWM. So I did it all on that. And plus, I could, you know, have an avenue to put some of my stuff on and other people that I was working with at the time. And for 3 years I did it, it was pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah, that's so cool. Well, you know, I like the fact that you said you could add your music, but you can add other people's music. That's what I really like. I mean, that's how I started out DJing at the very beginning. And I was like, oh yeah, I could put my music on and it could just be my music. And then I started not putting my music on anymore. It was just more of everybody else's music. And slowly my stuff slided over to the side. My fans were like, I don't hear your music. So yeah, it was just really strange for me. So I am so glad to hear that you were out there playing other people's musics on top of yours as well. Speaking of other people's music in that, let's talk about the George Clinton thing, the Funkadelics. Yeah. So you were requested to go on tour with them, but you didn't. Okay. So what an opportunity. You got to tell me all about this. Why did you not choose to go?
Well, the story about that. I mean, everyone gets that story wrong. What it is like, when I was like 14 or 15 years old, I used to hang out in the clubs downtown Boston. And there was a club called the Sugar Shack. And in them days, the Sugar Shack had all the major acts, you know, for R&B or whatever. And that's where they would showcase them. So I'd be going there, you know, and on the matinees and then trying to stay all night, you know, because I'm already in there. So they barely threw you out once you were in there. So the bands would come through and Parliament Funkadelic. Well, actually, they were just the Parliament in the beginning. They were coming there and doing shows, and, you know, I was into it, and I liked them. I was following them, and I dug them. So this is prior to Bootsy and his brother being in the band, Bootsy and Phelps Collins. And Bernie Worrell was already in it because he was the keyboard player. So I'm saying prior to that, with the original Parliaments, when they had the band, this is prior to them being Parliament Funkadelic. So when I was going later on through the years, I was a little older, probably when I started playing guitar, I was friends with Bootsy and his brother. So whenever they would come, I would go and hang with them, hang in the dressing room. And then when it was time to do sound check, I'd be up there with my guitar. So I'd always be playing Purple Haze, right?
Yeah.
The beginning of Purple Haze, and that was so funny to them that Bootsy named me Purple Haze when I was back there.
Oh,
that's
too funny.
He named me Purple Haze. So that's the funniest thing about that. But we ended up, me and my friend Chip, my partner, played the keyboards, and we started the band. we were hanging out one night, and we were in Paul's Mall in Boston. And now it's the Palm and Funkadelic. And it was Bootsy, his brother, and another guitar player. I think it was the guy who played guitar for Shaft. And we went in and we was talking to him and everything, and my friend knew Bernie very well. He brought his synthesizer with him, and I had my guitar. So somehow we convinced Bootsy and them to let us play, and he played the synthesizer while Bernie was playing the piano, and I added on as a third guitarist at this on this set. It was a couple of songs we played with Bootsy Phelps and the guitar player that did the riff for a Shaft. And so after that, you know, I was still cool whenever they came to town and everything. I mean, I talked to Bootsy all the time. But around that time, it was a suggestion, if I wanted to go, I was welcome to go. But at that time, I was so dedicated in what I was doing that I thought it would just be a good idea if I just, you know, stuck with my own type funk. So that's what happened. The mothership started then, and then we started the fathership.
I love it.
So that's where we're at right now.
What a great story. And real stuff, you know, it's those kind of things that you just won't forget. You have a lot of great stories with your with all your experience. I also notice with your music that you have like some type of sound bites at the very beginning of quite a bit of your songs, which I think is super cool. You're like opening it up and here it is. This is how we're starting it. This is what we mean. This is the information that's going on. So I think it's interesting. Also with some of the titles that you have too, like Government Cheese. What is that about?
Well, Government Cheese, that's a song about subsidies and things that, you know, we should be getting from the government, free health care and different things like that. So it's just a song, like not a protest more or less, but an enlightening, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Please give up that government cheese. And it's just the storyline that goes with that. But the music is like, when I seen Cadillac Records, I said to myself, I want to make a song and sound like it's Cadillac Records or Cadillac Record era. So that's when I got the idea for the music. But then as I did the music, the Government Cheese thing came out because I have the harmonica in there and stuff like that. So I wanted to get really, like, down home and put out the message. That's what that's about.
I like that. You're telling that story. You're painting that picture, just like you said. So what about the song House on Fire? What's that one about?
House on Fire, that's sort of like the House of the Rising Sun. But it's in this time, in this era, like talking about trap house, crack house, den of inequities, or whatever. It's just a take on that House of the Rising Sun song, which in the very beginning, plus the orchestration, remind you of it. But then that funky Rick James type synthesizer comes in, it switches it up a little bit. So that's kind of fun to listen to that song.
Your own style going on, that stamps who you are. You are doing exactly what you're supposed to do. Well, now I'm going to ask you to do something that maybe you haven't done before. Well, I'm hoping that you could tell me or tell our audience something that you've never told anybody else during an interview. Just us, just for our BTD listeners. What can you tell us that you haven't ever told anybody else in another interview? You know, I just want to know. So can you share?
Well, I don't know if as much I haven't really touched upon before.
You gotta have something.
I've done plenty of interviews and things, ones on YouTube and stuff, and I don't know. There's not much I could think of touching on. I mean, like, I'm hoping that this becomes a better world.
Well, you and me both.
I mean, like, I had full enthusiasm as a kid coming up. I just don't know how these kids of today, growing up, how they're going to deal with it, because they either have to do one way or another.
Yeah.
With us, we had so many ways, and eventually, by the time we got old enough, I guess we figured out we better do something smart. But I see, like, kids nowadays, even my own kids, I mean, like, I don't try to get in their business or anything, but I'm just hoping and praying that they do the right thing for themselves and for the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's about it. If I haven't shared that before, I'm glad to have done it.
Well, that's a good share. I'll accept that one. Well, I want you to continue sharing. I know we're coming to the close here, but could you let our BTD listeners know exactly where to find your music at?
Well, when I put the album out, which should be soon, within the next month or so, I'm planning on going on CD Baby or something like that, so that it'll be an avenue to put the music out on all platforms. So whenever you go looking for something, if you see the original Black Sheep of the Family, once it's out there, you'll probably get the album, the singles or whatever, and most likely you'll be getting others too, because I plan on releasing an album of the songs we did from the 80s up through when we were in that style and doing that music, which I never released yet. I'm going to put that out as a backlog so everyone can hear the transition from then to then to then to then. When the next album comes out, the new one, then the newer one, then you'll understand what we're trying to do. It's just like our idea of trying to keep it real and stay involved in the music. A lot of my people I started out with, band members and things, we did this stuff together, have passed on, and it's like kind of rough to find someone, you know, ready and to do that kind of stuff that we do. But once they start liking it. So we'll see if we can come out when we get some new crew together, but I'm pretty sure that that will happen pretty soon after this album comes out, because I'm planning on doing some shows and planning on getting out there. So anyone hears the music and they like it, they want to see us. I mean, like, I'm like not an old blues guy. I'm an old funk and roll guy. I come out rap, funk, and roll. So that's what you show you're going to see when you come see
me. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's going to be a good one. I know everybody's just going to love it. Well, Billy, it has been an absolute pleasure having you here. And I loved all your stories. I love, love, love them. It just puts it all together as you, as an artist, as a musician, all the stories that not everybody and their brother has, you know? These are great stories. Well, Billy, be sure to keep us informed on what's going on so we can play your music and let everybody know the happenings.
Yes, thank you very much. It was a pleasure dealing and talking with you and to the BTD listeners. I hope you find this satisfying. I mean, this is what I did for you. And thank you, T. Dawn. I appreciate the opportunity.